About 30 seconds to go here before the BBC News comes in.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess we've thanked everybody. Here's David in Madison, and here's Tamara in Brooklyn, and Muddy. I better let Art take over here. And Larry in Mazumani, we thank you. Thank you, Mark. In Sun Prairie, and Mary Lowenberg in Mount Horeb. And she'll be getting a chance on the tickets, too.
What a great day. Thank you so much for tuning in to Mud Acres today. See you next time. Bye.
Oh.
1st test shipment would aim to leave in the next 2 days. Jeremy Konyndyke from Refugees International has rejected Israeli claims that the UN was to blame for delaying trucks carrying humanitarian supplies.
The Israeli military operation has, for the last 5 months, hampered the UN, hampered NGO operations, blocked them from moving throughout the territory, routinely denying requests from the UN to move aid to the north. There have been strikes on NGO and UN facilities, strikes on warehouses, strikes on residences, and there is still no functioning coordination between humanitarians and a military force to ensure humanitarians don't get struck.
A humanitarian airdrop in Gaza is reported to have killed at least 5 people. It's said to have happened at Al-Shati refugee camp in the north of the Strip. Parachutes attached to the aid apparently failed to open. Eyewitnesses say it plunged at high speed, like a rocket. Wira Davis is in Jerusalem.
The airdrops are precarious. Those airdrops may look very good. The Americans, the British and the Jordanians have been dropping tons of food, clearly not enough for the population of Gaza, but they've been dropping them, trying to target them towards hospital compounds and areas of open ground, of which there isn't very much in Gaza. So the fact that an airdrop either may have missed its target or may have hit somebody in the scramble on the ground to reach these packages, because that's the other phenomenon you certainly see, is when one of these packages or pallets hits the ground, people rush towards it, irrespective of what may be still dropping from the sky.
The UN's nuclear watchdog says its specialists have been hearing explosions near the Zaporizhia power plant in Ukraine. The facility is the biggest nuclear power station in Europe. Bethany Bell reports.
The IAEA says its team at Zaporizhia has heard multiple explosions in recent days, suggesting that heavy weapons were being used close to the plant. The agency also said Zaporizhia remains without backup external power. Speaking on the sidelines of a meeting of the IAEA's Board of Governors, the Ukrainian Energy Minister, Herman Khaloshenko, said that the safety situation at Zaporizhia was becoming worse and worse.
The security forces in northwest Nigeria are trying to rescue more than 280 children kidnapped from a school in Kaduna State. On Thursday, gunmen on motorbikes reportedly took the children to a nearby forest. Last weekend, more than 200 people were also taken captive in Borno State. Both abductions are believed to have been carried out by fighters affiliated with the Islamist group Boko Haram. World News from the BBC. A report on the British Army's top undercover agent in the IRA during the Troubles in Northern Ireland has found that his actions probably cost more lives than he saved. The agent, codenamed Steak Knife, worked inside a unit of the Irish Republican paramilitary movement that was responsible for rooting out informers. Kevin Winters is a lawyer for the relatives of some of those who died and said charges should be brought.
The staggering takeaway message is that the state could have and should have intervened to save lives. That this didn't happen is legally and morally reprehensible. We're left with the horrendous conclusion and takeaway message that both state and IRA were co-conspirators in the murder of some of its citizens.
Donald Trump has posted a bond of almost $92 million as he appeals against the verdict of a defamation case against him in New York. He wants to reverse an order to pay the writer E. Jean Carroll more than $83 million. A jury found he defamed Miss Carroll when he denied sexually abusing her in a department store in the 1990s. The Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban is to meet Donald Trump today in the U.S. state of Florida. The two politicians will hold talks at the former president's Mar-a-Lago residence. Mr. Orban openly supports a second term for Mr. Trump and has said he's the best placed leader to settle the war in Ukraine. Both men oppose sending military aid to Kyiv to help fight the Russian invasion. The United States created more jobs than expected last month, but the unemployment rate rose to its highest level in 2 years. Official figures showed it crept up to 3.9% in January. However, 275,000 new jobs were added in total. The report sends mixed signals for the world's biggest economy, as the US Central Bank continues to debate whether to cut interest rates. Most of the new jobs were in healthcare firms, the government, bars and restaurants. BBC News.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Five Nines, a locally owned cloud service provider of enterprise-level IT infrastructure consulting, hosting, and management services. On the web at fivenines.com. Phone number 512-1000.
6 foot six above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground.
No one in power ain't giving up nothing. No change without struggle. No one in power.
WORT 89.9 FM, listener-sponsored community radio, Madison, Wisconsin.
And hello, welcome to A Public Affair. I am Esti Dino. Happy International Women's Day. And we are here on our second and last for this time pledge drive show. Last week we talked about one terrible situation in Gaza, and as you know, we've covered it quite a bit. And today we are going to cover another terrible situation in Haiti, which again we covered fairly regularly. And I will have one of our favorite guests, Jake Johnston, in just a couple minutes. But before that, I have with me here in the studio Brad Geyer, an activist here in town, an organizer with Veterans Voice for... No, I'm mixing my two groups there. Veterans for Peace, which is a group that I helped start years ago. Thank you, Brad, for joining us today.
Hi, Esti. It's a pleasure to be here.
And tell people why they should pledge and why we want them to pledge right away so we don't have to stop and pledge wrapped.
It's very important to support WORT Community Radio because they bring you unfiltered information, unlike... the corporate mainstream media that is very much influenced by the money. You guys bring us nice raw facts.
Yeah, and WORT has been important in your life, you just told me, yeah?
Yes, I've been listening to WORT for over 20 years. I am from out in Jefferson, and I don't think where I was, I had a lot of access to a variety of information. So the WORT radio that reached out there really helped... make me a progressive, whether it was Democracy Now! Or A Public Affair or learning about the events on the insurgent kiosk or from Jim Hightower. It really helped open my mind.
Yeah, yeah. And I think your story is not a unique story. So if it did that to you, the number here is...
608-256-2001.
And people can also pledge online at
WORTFM.org.
Right, and there you see the donate button, and you can donate. There's all kinds of premia, of course. We're not going to go through the list because we know you're giving money to really to the show and to the station. But what one or two premia caught your eye, Brad?
Well, there's a cool embroidered patch, a WORT patch at the $35 level. Or I really like the rib knit hat at the $75 level.
Mm-hmm. So these are two. Of course, there's also the hoodie with the P.S. Mueller illustration for at the $120. I usually, so Susan comes with some theme for the pledge drive every time, and I don't think I've ever followed it. But, and I still don't, you know, but I do like the theme this time because it's another weirdo for Wart. And I was thinking, you know, I was a weird child. I was a reject for some years until I became popular in middle school.
Well, it's boring to be normal.
Good point. But also I think, yeah, probably a lot of us are kind of weirdos because we're not interested in, what's the name of these, all these women who are on reality TV, so-called, you know. Well, The Bachelor or all these sisters and mothers and what are their names? Oh, that too. I'm thinking of, anyway, the one who was married to Kanye West. Well, what are they called?
Kardashians.
There you go. I have never watched any of these things that we just mentioned, but I am interested in what's really happening in the world. So if you're one of these people, the number again?
608-256-2001.
And the online URL?
WORTFM.org.
And you have someone to thank, don't you, Brad?
I do. I would like to thank Harry.
Harry, again, thank you, Harry, so much. I love it. I love that you always are the first to pledge and really, really appreciate that. Harry, of course, also volunteers here at Wart. What does he like?
Harry likes a public affair. He likes Esty. And he likes Labor Radio and the local evening news.
All right. Thank you so much, Harry. People, please follow.
Thank you, Harry.
Follow in Harry's footsteps. The more, the sooner you pledge, the more you pledge, the less we'll have to do pledge wrapping, and the more we'll be able to hear Jake Johnston and his important information. Jake is a senior research associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. He is the lead author for CEPR's Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch blog, and his articles and op-eds have been published in outlets such as The New York Times, The Nation, The Intercept, Le Monde Diplomatique, Boston Review, and Al Jazeera. His book, Aid State, Elite Panic, Disaster Capitalism, and the Battle to Control Haiti, was recently published and is now available from St. Martin's Press. Thank you very much, Jake, for joining us again today. Really appreciate your knowledge and interpretation. Give us first, if you would, the eagle eye view. What's going on in Haiti right now, and how did we get here?
Yeah, thanks, Esty. It's great to be back. So things, obviously have been building in Haiti for some time. And there's obviously a tremendous amount of context, both recent history and going back 200 years to Haiti's founding.
Yes. Right,
that explains the situation today. But just to sort of start with the most immediate and what's been happening over the last week in Haiti, and I think, you know, really the only way I can describe what's been taking place is a campaign of terror across the capital over the last week. And so we've seen a real escalation in the situation. This started last week while the de facto prime minister was outside of the country. He had traveled to Guyana for a CARICOM summit and then traveled to Kenya to secure a police mission that he has been requesting for some time now. And while he was out of the country, the various and disparate armed groups that have been increasingly sort of showing their power and increasing their strength in Haiti in recent years, but have been fighting each other, changed tactics and announced an alliance and began attacking state institutions. And this has really brought regular life in the capital to a complete halt. There is very little distribution or movement of people or goods. And these armed groups now working together have seized a half dozen or more police stations. They have assaulted the National Penitentiary and other prisons outside of Port-au-Prince. Somewhere around 5,000 people have been freed in that process, and have also attacked the National Airport and have shut down all air traffic in and out of the country. That has meant that the de facto Prime Minister, Henri, has been unable to return. And there have been calls for his resignation for some time, and it now appears that this has successfully prevented him from returning to the country, and the international support that has really been his only source of legitimacy for the last 30 months is now evaporating. And so that's sort of the brief rundown. We can obviously get into a lot more details.
Let's start with the armed groups, which I appreciate that that's what you call them. Everywhere else you hear that they're gangs, which... Well, let's talk about it. Are they gangs? Are they armed groups? Where do they come from? What is their history?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think you have to understand a few things done to get at this dynamic, right? I mean, for me, at the heart of so much of what we've seen in Haiti, and certainly the presence of these armed groups, is the absence of the state, and not just the absence of the state, but the lack of representation and accountability to the population on the part of the state, right? That has left huge parts of the population totally outside, right? And not represented whatsoever in the official state apparatus. This is a state that has been extracting from the population for a very, very long time, right? And not taking care of the population. And in the absence of that, you have seen groups, sometimes very connected to local communities, sometimes not, right, form to try and, get a seat, right, to sort of secure resources for one's community, for one's family, friends, right? But I think we've also seen this sort of take on new life and new characteristics in recent years, right? I think the reality today is that many of these groups are divorced from the communities that they came from, right? It is not about protection as much as it is sort of transformed into criminal entrepreneurship, where these groups have secured massive arms stockpiles and ammunition, and have, whereas traditionally there have been a lot of links to political and economic elites, and these groups have been used for those purposes, and certainly there are still those connections, but we've also seen them become more autonomous actors, right? And so I think one of the big questions over the last week is, how much of this are these groups working on their own, and how much of this is connected to the broader political fights that are happening in Haiti?
Uh-huh. So let's explore that. First of all, and by the way, people, if you don't pledge or donate within Jake's next answer, we will have two pledge wraps. So if we get two pledges right now, we won't have two. So, Jake, let's start with Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, whose name we hear the most right now, and also his nickname, Barbecue, sounds ominous. Who is he? How did he get that nickname? And what's the history of his group, G9?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, Cherizier is a former police officer. He sort of became estranged from the force after a police massacre shooting at a school in the Grand Ravine neighborhood in 2017, and then was formally kicked out of the force a year later after another massacre that he was implicated in by some local human rights groups and others. And since then, you know, he has sort of formed this base of his own, right? I mean, Barbecue is talking a lot about revolution, right? About changing the system and overthrowing the sort of state, the very state that I was criticizing for not being representative, right? I think that analysis is something that is shared widely, right, in Haiti. I think there is a big question, right, about the sincerity of those of that rhetoric, right? And I think you look at what's been happening, I think, over the last week, right, this alliance of the various disparate armed groups, they claim to be fighting to free the people from the repressive state, but it is these very groups that are terrorizing the population today, right? And there is an inherent contradiction there. And so, you know, I think the hope that the armed uprising is what is going to deliver, you know, a brighter future for Haiti is not looking so great.
Is anyone hoping that he can bring a brighter future?
Well, look, I mean, I think, again, I mean, I think there's a certain amount of support, of course. I mean, there's, again, a system that has abandoned the population. And so in that environment, right, anyone who's trying to fight against that is going to have, you know, is likely to get a certain amount of support. But again, you know, these organizations have terrorized the population. And so to the extent that there's real popular support behind the actions of these armed groups in Haiti, I don't see that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Brad, I'm afraid we do have to do some pledge wrapping. We didn't get any new pledges or donations online. So why should people give us money?
Well, people should send some money to WART because it's a unique service. It's a unique information that we get here. I think throughout much of the rest of the state, you have sort of a corporate mainstream radio stations that are totally
mainstream
different from
right wing, right? That's what you get.
Yeah, and they often get to be subsidized by our local and collegiate sports and maybe even other sports. So yeah, WART is more substantial, more serious, real stuff.
WART is where you get real information. And let me ask our listeners, when's the last time that you heard a whole hour about Haiti? It was the last time you listened to Jake Johnston on WORT. Basically. And that is true for everything that we do here. You know, we cover some things that really practically no one else covers except for Democracy Now! And of course, leftist publications. And we cover also things that are covered on the mainstream media, but we give them a lot of time and we are not constrained by what the corporations that give them money allow for. You know, I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, especially on Fridays. They have these shows in the morning, first hour about what's happening here in the United States and the second one about what's happening in the world. And today as I was listening, I heard that there's kind of a new tone about Israel and you know, the genocide that it's committing in Gaza. And I thought, oh, you know, apparently they have permission to say some more truthful things because Biden is getting sick of Netanyahu. But until now, it was all about what's right with Israel and what's wrong with Hamas.
Yeah, I would call it public relations. They've made a change in their public relations approach.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So, folks, I'm going to get back to Jake because that's what we want to talk about today. But please, 608-256-2001, extension 1, to pledge. Or you can do it online, WORT, WORTFM.org, and just donate there. We did really, really well last week. We want to do really, really well again. We need to do really, really well so that the station can continue doing its thing and so that we here on a public affair can continue doing our things. So back to you, Jake, and to Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier. He said that if Prime Minister Ariel Henry comes back to the country will be plunged into civil war and genocide. That does not sound good. What does he mean when he says that, do you think?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent question. But I sort of reframe it a little bit because the actors that are harming civilians, right, and make no mistake, civilians are being harmed in a serious way right now in Haiti, are these very armed groups. So if there is, mass casualties, it's clear who is ultimately responsible for that, at least directly, right? I think when we're talking about all of this, right, when we can talk about the situation on the ground right now, but I think, I'd like to take a step sort of back and talk about sort of the broader context of what's led Haiti down this path, right? And
yes.
I think especially for an audience, here in this country, is what role our government has played in contributing to this, right? And so when we talk about a state that has been hollowed out, that is no longer representative, that's directly related to the actions of our government, to the U.S. government and to others that have overthrown democratically elected governments, that have overturned election results, and for the last 30 months have steadfastly backed this prime minister, right, illegitimate prime minister, Ariel Henry. And groups in Haiti, groups in here in the U.S. from the diaspora, et cetera, right, have been warning and saying exactly this, that this continued support for a prime minister who is unwilling to share power and holds all the power, because there is not a single elected official in Haiti right now, right, was going to lead to this sort of a crisis. And now we're here. And unfortunately, right, those policies have pushed Haiti so far down that the resolution is that much more difficult today, right? So there is, regardless of what Cherizier says, Henry is out of the country and he's unlikely to return, certainly to return as prime minister. There are political negotiations happening right now to come up with a new transitional governance structure, right? What exactly that looks like will be, obviously is yet to be determined. But that's sort of where things are moving now, right? And so I think, the big question is this actually about getting rid of Henry, or is this about something else? Will that be an acceptable outcome or not? And how does all of this actually meaningfully improve the lives of the Haitian population that are in such jeopardy right now?
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how Henri came to power, which was not that long ago. I think maybe we talked last time just around when that happened. But let's remind people how he came to power and what makes him a person that the armed gangs, the civilians in Haiti, as well as at least now, finally, it seemed the Biden administration think should not be in that position of power.
Yeah, exactly. So, this Ariel Henry was nominated to be prime minister just 2 days before the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse, which took place in July 2021. So at that point, he had not yet actually taken that position or formed a cabinet. And of course, even at that time, right, there was not a functioning legislature, which is how constitutionally a prime minister is actually selected and approved, right? So even absent the assassination of the president, his prime ministership, right, was going to be contested because it was a choice by a president whose own mandate was contested, right? But in the aftermath of that assassination, there was a power struggle between various actors in Haiti, and the international community, after about 10 days, urged Henri to form a government. And lo and behold, that's precisely what happened. And so for the last 30 months, right, that has been the de facto government of Haiti. And the situation has gone from bad to worse, right? And I think naturally, again, there's no other elected officials in office. Henri holds the political power. And so he's going to take the political fallout from the fact that the situation has deteriorated to the extent it has. I don't think that's unjustified, for a number of reasons, one of which is, again, as I was mentioning earlier, there have been from that very moment, right, there have been efforts to try and negotiate a broader political coalition to try and govern the country, right? That Henri doing this alone was never going to work, right? That this blow up was inevitable if that policy was continued and pursued, and yet it was, and Henri was the one who pursued it. And so, he has certainly become quite an unpopular figure in Haiti, and increasingly now internationally, after many, 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 many months of, steadfast support from that international community. Why now the armed groups have turned against him, I think, is, again, a more difficult question to answer. And part of that is because there's no question that there are strong links between armed groups and government authorities, government officials, right, high-ranking police officials, and of course, opposition politicians as well, right? And so how those balance of forces have played out, right, we haven't seen the armed groups directly go after Henri throughout the 30 months. In fact, you know, there have been many allegations that they were actually sort of serving as a useful tool for Henri to justify foreign intervention, to justify the lack of an electoral process, right? These things can't happen with security. And so again, you know, what made that ultimate switch? What changed the calculation? You know, again, we're in the middle of this right now, and I think it's probably going to take some time to fully understand how those various alliances have shifted and morphed over the previous couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. And we will talk more about that in a few minutes, but damn it, we still have only that one pledge. And so, unfortunately, I have to stop, Jake, and talk to you and convince you to pledge and donate and to do it right now, because if you don't, we'll just have to continue pledge wrapping for the rest of the hour, and that would be a huge shame, wouldn't it, Brad?
It definitely would.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're interesting, I'm maybe interesting, but what we're going to say is not that interesting, whereas Jake has a lot of information that everybody can use. Yeah?
Definitely.
So, folks, we need to hear from you right now. 608-256-2001, extension 1. We have actually four people that we want to thank who are here ready to get your pledges. They're Katie, Tamara, Chris, and Rick. We also want to thank Just Veggies, who are providing lunch today. And I also want to thank Milio's, who provided the lunch last week, and I'm not sure I remember to thank them then. So if I didn't, thank you now. And if I did, thank you twice. That's okay. But we need to thank the rest of you too. So looks like we haven't gotten anything online. No, nothing online, nothing on the phone. That is not okay. What do you think, Brad? Why should people pledge to this show particularly?
It's very valuable information that you provide, and you are so, I don't know, educated on so many different subjects. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how the format of a public affair has changed through the years. Has it always been this way?
No. So, good question. So, when I started listening to Wart, I've been here many years, and actually A Public Affair was the first show I ever heard in Madison, because my then husband, who is the one who brought me to this place I'd never heard of, Madison, right? He turned the radio on at noon, our first day here, and I heard it and I was like, wow, this is good stuff. And it was good stuff, but the problem, I see it as a problem, but at the time, the news director was the only one who was the host of A Public Affair 5 days a week. So he was getting paid for it, which, I mean, that's fine. I wish I could get paid for it, but that's okay. You know, I'm
this
happy to do it
as a volunteer.
This is
much different than what we have now.
That ex-husband of mine and I had been listening to shortwave radio, and I've been here now for 40 years, so you know, that's significantly longer than Jade, for example, has been alive, our producer. But it's also pre-internet. And so, anyway, by the time we got here, I was very well informed of what was going on in the world, because we were listening to Radio Moscow, to Radio Habana Cuba, we were listening to the rebels in El Salvador, we were listening to, of course, the German Deutsche Welle and Australia, and so we knew a lot, and I started calling on this show, and offering information as was appropriate, but There's various explanations to what happened. But basically what happened was that apparently I became quite popular with my auditions, and that got this news director unhappy. And at some point... Maybe, yeah. At some point, he banned me. He did not allow me to call on a public affair anymore. And he told the people who were answering the phones, and some of them rebelled and let me on anyway. But we started the campaign, and there was a whole community campaign to basically allow the information that I was providing on a public affair.
We do have a donation, by the way.
Okay, thank this donor.
All right, we have Brian from Madison. Thank you much. We have items here starting from $30. He got the sticker set. He likes Public Affair Friday, Fire Worship, and Soul Sessions.
Which is such an interesting mix of what we offer here on this station, right?
Yes, it is.
Anyway, I'll continue my story because that's the only one we got. Thank you so much, Brian. Really appreciate that. So it became a big community. You don't have to thank people who pledge online. So... I mean, we don't send them this thing.
Okay,
thank you, do thank them absolutely. So it became a community campaign. A lot of people supported that, and we actually ran that guy out of town eventually. And then Margot Robb became the news director, and to my amazement, one day I got a phone call in which he asked me if I would like to do one show. You know, to host a public affair. She suggested that I do an open line. I said yes, but just then Yitzhak Rabin, who was the prime minister of Israel at the time, was assassinated by a Jewish settler. And so that's what I did it. And that's 28 and a half years ago that I started doing this show. And I have not received a penny for it all these years, you know.
What year would that have been?
The world owes me a lot of time, a lot of money. What?
What year would have that been?
That was 1996.
Ago? Okay.
Yeah. Jake, do you want to help us pledge wrap? Because we still need some more.
Hey, anybody who's willing to give a platform to Haiti for an hour is worthy of a donation in my book. That's for sure, Esty.
Yeah, and it's definitely not the first time we have done it. You know, we used to do it with... Do you remember David Burns? He was the head of the something hemisphere... Or maybe that's before your time, Jake. I think you're younger, right? Anyway, he just loved Haiti. We had him... kind of twice a year or so to talk about Latin America, and he always also wanted to talk about Haiti because he loved it. And of course Haiti was in a lot of trouble 28 years ago too, and 25 years ago. So let's assume that our listeners are busy calling now, though I haven't heard the phone of you,
right? I have not.
No. Folks, we need to hear from you. We just wasted, well, not wasted maybe, but we just spent about 8 minutes talking about other things and we want to get back to Haiti. Yay, okay, we did get, let me thank this person quickly. And, oh my goodness, Teresa McNeil called us from Jamaica. And you know, if you listen to WORT somewhere out of Madison, let alone somewhere out of the United States, we want to hear from you too. And thank you so much, Teresa. She loves all the news programs and all the great music. And you know, I love almost everything here too.
I think we should go to Jamaica.
Well, that would be nice. But right now we are here. And, there's more. Okay, good. Thank you so much, folks. All right. So let's get back to Jake, because we don't want to spend any more time, but we do need to continue hearing from you all. So please, 608-256-2001, or donate online at wordfm.org. And I will thank the rest of you that we just got after we hear back from Jake. So, Jake, you mentioned that these armed groups have connections with politicians. I also read that with the judicial system and, of course, with the police. What do we know? Can you tell us some, offer some details about what, you know, about these relationships?
Well, look, I think that gets really tricky, right? I mean, you know, getting into the details of those financial links and political links is not an easy business. I mean, what one thing we've seen right alongside this siege of the Capitol over the last week are a few specific politicians who have, at the very least, tried to take advantage of the moment to seize power, right? And namely, one name that might be familiar to listeners here, who's been involved in Haiti for quite some time, is Guy Philippe, a former member of the police who was instrumental in sort of fomenting paramilitary violence that led to the coup in 2004 of Jean-Pertrand Aristide. He was eventually arrested by in Haiti, extradited to the U.S., and spent more than 6 years in a U.S. jail for drug-related money laundering, and was deported by the U.S. back to Haiti just this fall. And has come back and has now declared his political intentions and openly sort of tried to advocate for the ouster of Henri and put a proposal forward naming himself president while these armed groups were terrorizing the Capitol and looking to oust Henri. And so, you know, a lot of the speculation today on the ground, it concerns exactly that relationship, right? What was the role of Guy Philippe? Why did he return to Haiti? Why was he allowed to return to Haiti? And what role is he playing right now in fomenting this violence?
Yeah, that is a good question, isn't it? I mean, one wonders. But let me ask you another thing. I started the show by saying happy International Women's Day. And I think today is a very unhappy day for a lot of women around the world. But Haiti is one of them where there's a lot of kidnappings and gender-based violence. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, thank you. I think this is such an important part of the story, right? And you know, I was talking earlier, I mean, who's paying the price for these actions in Port-au-Prince right now? And it's the civilian population, and more so than anyone, it's women and children, right, who are paying the price. And the reports that we've, you know, been hearing for a long time out of Haiti, I mean, yes, kidnapping, but also rape on a mass scale, right? Sexual violence on a mass scale. And I think, you know, this is extremely important to be highlighting today, but every day, right? And trying to understand the human impact of what's happening in Haiti, right? This is not just a political fight. It's a political fight with massive human repercussions, right? And again, the policies, including policies by the U.S. government that have pushed Haiti to this point, bear a tremendous amount of responsibility for that situation on the ground today. And I also want to talk about the role of U.S. weapons in all of this that's happening, right, that's inflicting this harm on Haitian women and Haitian civilians and men and children, right, is these gangs have guns. Where do they get the guns? Not from Haiti, okay? They are all being imported from the United States through illegal trafficking networks, right? And that is, again, something directly that our government can actually try and do something about without intervening in Haiti, right, which is what we've done in the past, is not try and address this problem or take responsibility for our role in it. But coming from a place, I think, of institutional racism and overt racism, believing that Haiti cannot solve its own problems, tried to impose solutions from the outside in Haiti, right? But we can stop arms trafficking from the United States, right? We know these networks, and it's going to take political will on the part of people here in the United States to try and do something about this.
Yeah. Let's thank people. Brad, I have two people to thank. Dan, who likes the public affair, the news, folk shows, and he says, thanks for coverage of Haiti and Palestine. Thank you so much, Dan. And also online, we got a donation from Jane A. Thank you, Jane, so very much. Can you see what Jane likes, Brad? I can't.
No, I do not.
Okay. Who do you are? You have two people to thank, too.
I would like to thank Anonymous from Madison.
Thank you so much, Anonymous. What does this person like?
A public affair, SD, of course. Music Antiqua.
Musica
and Democracy
Antiqua?
Now.
Yeah. Again, the interesting mix that we have here. And who's
Anonymous that? Is grateful that you're talking about Haiti.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Anonymous. And who's the other one you have?
The next one is Patrick, also from Madison.
And what does Patrick like?
Patrick likes A Public Affair, likes Esty, and wants to support Esty.
Oh, thank you so much, Patrick. Really appreciate hearing from all of you. We are about halfway to our goal. We need to hear from the rest of you. We have only, we have less than 15 minutes left. We're going to continue talking with Jake. I really appreciate his knowledge. And I trust you folks to either call 608-256-2001 extension 1 or to pledge or to donate online. Need to hear from you. We're not there. We're just about halfway there. And to continue with what we were just talking about, Jake, the United Nations said that just this week, at least 15,000 people in Port-au-Prince had to flee their homes. Where do they go, and what does that mean?
Yeah, in fact, the 15,000 people who've been displaced recently, and I think, you know, that is probably a massive undercount of the actual number of people displaced, mm-hmm. were in fact displaced from displacement sites, right? So this is a population that had already been displaced from their homes and were in, you know, schools, public spaces, things like this with very, you know, difficult conditions, who were then displaced again by the fighting that's been taking place. And, you know, yes, this has happened over the last week, but this has been happening for some time, right? And the displaced population from the violence in Port-au-Prince is now well over 300,000 individuals, right? So this is a massive scale. Doctors Without Borders came out with a report just yesterday. They did some survey work in Cité Soleil, one of the most populous neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince, and found levels of violence, violent crime, right, homicides, that were rivaling war zones, right, that were similar to the ISIS siege in Damascus in Syria from 2017, right? That's the level of violence that is being experienced by the Haitian people right now on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that also the health system is on the brink of collapse. There's looting going on. Businesses are closed. Schools and universities and most public services are not working. Again, this reminds me a lot of what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah, I think, and you've increasingly heard people refer to the situation in Port-au-Prince as an open-air prison, right? People are trapped. They are trapped in their homes, and they're unable to get supplies. And I think, you know, it's one of the concerns if this drags on, right? The ports, things like this, they're not able to function right now. Food stocks are going to start running low. Fuel supplies are already running low. And this is going to have a tremendous impact, not just directly on people, but also, like you mentioned, health services and things like this. You know, we're hearing constant urgent appeals that, you know, supplies are running low and things like this. Hospitals are treating, you know, dozens, 50 people a day for gunshot wounds right now, right? I mean, this is a really significant crisis. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's important to also talk, right? It is a security crisis. It's also a political crisis, right? Because these things are intrinsically linked in Haiti. And so, you know, there needs to be a political resolution, and there also needs to be a security resolution. There's been a tremendous amount of discussion for quite some time now about foreign security assistance for Haiti, right? And I think ultimately the hope, right, would be that you would have a legitimate, or at least more legitimate, Haitian government that could define the support that is necessary for itself, right? But I think we could also talk about why you know, again, this is not the first time foreign troops are being discussed to be sent to Haiti, right? You talked about interventions in the past from 2004 following the coup to 2017. There were more than, you know, 10,000 United Nations peacekeepers on the ground tasked with building local capacity, supporting the police, supporting the justice system, and things like this. The failure of those prior interventions is what is on display today in Haiti, right? And so I think, you know, importing security, right, is not going to be a sustainable solution for Haiti. The Kenya mission that is being discussed right now is an estimated budget of up to $600 million for 1 year. The Haitian police, their annual budget is $200 million. And right now, police officers can't even get their basic salaries, right? Police officers don't have the same equipment that the armed groups have, right? And so we've seen over the last week, right, police unions speaking out saying, you know, where's the leadership? Why haven't we gotten backup? Why aren't we getting more equipment? And the international community, you know, is focused entirely on rounding up hundreds of millions of dollars to bring in foreign police officers when there are police officers in Haiti who can't get the basic supplies they need just to take care of their families, let alone actually defend any critical infrastructure or anything of that nature, right? So these dynamics are deeply rooted in a history of foreign intervention and foreign aid that has undermined local institutions, that has hollowed out the state and hollowed out local capacity. And again, until those policies begin to change, right, it's going to be very difficult to see further foreign intervention as anything other than perpetuating this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Brad, we have someone to thank. Claire, what does she like?
We have two people to thank. Claire likes pretty much everything, a public affair, the news, and music.
Yay. Thank you very much, Claire.
We have Dan.
Yeah, I thank Dan.
You did, okay.
So, but you can thank him again. Why not?
Thank you, Dan. Dan likes public affair, news, and folk shows.
We thank all of you. We're getting closer, but we're still far from our goal. We have only 8 minutes left. I'm going to continue talking with Jake rather than pledge wrap because I trust you to help us get there. We need about $300-$400 to make it. So we can do it. Just please call us right now, 608-256-2001, or do it online at wartfm.org. And Jake, I do want to get to talk about your book, but let me just ask you before that, you know, you mentioned that the situation goes back a long time, and there's definitely people who are saying that it goes all the way back to the first slave rebellion, which happened in Haiti. Can you tell us about that and make the connection?
Yeah, thank you. I think this is so important, and I think we need to, you know, try and center this in all of our conversations around Haiti, because I think it's a part of history that has been systematically suppressed, right? That has not been part of discourse, that is not taught in schools, right? And the Haitian Revolution was so critical. I mean, so critical in overthrowing the enslavement of the population, of course, in Haiti, but also it changed the history of the world, right? I mean, this was a revolutionary act that spread across the world. And in fact, in many ways, right, that is what Haiti has paid for so dearly ever since, right? It took 60 plus years for the United States to even recognize the independent nation of Haiti, which was the first country to constitutionally abolish the institution of slavery, right? And so this, again, the debt that the world owes to Haiti is tremendous. And yet that same world has punished Haiti, right, for those same reasons for so long. And when we talk about this, we also have to talk about the crippling ransom that Haiti was forced to pay for its freedom, right? So in 1825, some 20 years after the revolution was complete, France, with gunboats off the shores of Haiti, extracted a deal with the Haitian government to basically be compensated for their lost property in Haiti, right? For the successful revolution, for the loss of the enslaved population. And that debt Haiti paid for well over 100 years, right? And so when we look at the situation today, when we ask ourselves, why, right? We have to understand these deep historical roots to everything we're seeing today. And, you know, I appreciate you wanting to discuss the book, and we haven't talked about it specifically, but we are discussing the book, right? The book, as much as anything, right, is the story of this history and this recent history, too, that has led to the situation on the ground today, right? And so, you know, again, I think it's sort of more important to be highlighting what's happening today. And just as importantly, what our government, what the U.S. government can do differently to try and allow the situation to prove. And at its most simple, that is to actually and finally allow Haitians to chart their own future.
Mm-hmm. And we still have time to discuss that after I thank Rose Cancion Lapis. Thank you so very much, Rose, for your pledge. And she likes APA and Esty. So thank you very much, Rose. We still need more money, folks. We have only 5 minutes. And Susan's new role is that if we don't get it during this hour, it's not ours. So I need you to do it right now. Benedict made an online donation. Thank you, Benedict. And Rose and Benedict are getting us closer, but not quite there yet, folks. $300 more, please. And I'm going back to Jake. If you don't do it right now, I don't get it. So please call right now or pledge on or donate online. So Jake, what can the United States, the strongest country in the world and the one big power closest to Haiti, which has been involved in the turmoil there forever, what can the United States do better?
Look, I think we've talked about some of this stuff, right? Certainly doing something significant about preventing U.S. weapons from going into Haiti, right, is going to have a big impact. But for me, and I think what, you know, we're hearing from groups in Haiti consistently, right, is what is really necessary is allowing Haitians to chart their own political future, right? This history we've seen most recently with Ariel Henry, but a pattern repeated throughout the last 20, 30 years since Haiti's sort of turn toward democracy in 1990 has been leaders imposed or provided legitimacy from international actors, right? That dynamic has had extremely detrimental effects for Haiti and for Haitians, right? And until that dynamic begins to change, again, it's going to be extremely difficult to alter that dynamic. And so I think right now, right, you know, I was talking earlier through these political negotiations that are taking place, you know, it's absolutely imperative that the United States actually allow that process to play out without conditions and without putting their thumb on the scale to determine the makeup and composition of the next government of Haiti. And equally as important, once there is a next government, to actually allow them to govern, right? What we've seen so often in Haiti's past have been when governments have tried to exert independence, right? When they have tried to do things in the interest of the Haitian people and not in the interest of foreign powers, they are punished, right? They're punished by being overthrown, or they're punished by having aid withheld or withdrawn, right? Or being imposed with an embargo. And these actions, destabilize the situation, right? And of course, we'll continue to do so with real human impact. And so I think, you know, the most important thing the United States can do for Haiti is actually allow a Haitian solution to emerge.
Yeah, and we have just about one more minute left, but I think a lot of people probably remember these pictures of a border police officer on a horse whipping Haitian migrants, and the U.S. generally deports Haitians. Can we do also something for those who are in this country or those who are trying hard to get in here?
Yeah, Esty, thank you so much for bringing that up. I mean, it is unconscionable that the United States is deporting people to Haiti, right? The U.S. has evacuated most of their staff from Haiti because they're not safe. And yet we're willing to send people back to Haiti, right? I mean, this is unimaginable. And in fact, there was a deportation flight that was canceled last week because the airport was closed due to the violence, right? And that's what actually stopped the deportation flight from happening. Huh. And, you know, I think you many people are wondering, you know, why had the U.S. stood behind Henri so often? You know, former U.S. Special Representative to Haiti, Dan Foote, who resigned in protest after the Del Rio situation that we saw. His analysis was that the reason why the U.S. stood behind Henri is because he accepted those deportation flights, because he was willing to accept that, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to consider that this is not just, again, when we talk about what motivates U.S. foreign policy, it's quite often the domestic political impact, right? It's politicians who are looking to protect themselves and in turn, the foreign nations and the populations there that are actually paying the price, mm-hmm. right? And I think when we talk about migration from Haiti, we can't talk about it without understanding the root causes are as much our fault as anything in Haiti.
Right. Well, Jake Johnston, Syria Research Associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and his book, if you want to learn more about Haiti, is Aid State, Elite Panic, Disaster Capitalism, and the Battle to Control Haiti. It is an interesting title for a book, Jake. Thank you so very much for joining us today. Folks, if you have pledged, I will thank you. I will disturb the funny boys. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to Jade today. And again, thanks to the people who answered the phones for us, Katie, Tamara, Chris, and Rick. Thanks to Just Veggies, MSD Dinor. Thank you, Jake. We'll call on you again.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. We come and never pre-recorded with information
that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. Up next, the Funny Boys.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Oh, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Howdy.
Hey, how you doing?
Am I on?
You are on.
What?
I can hear you.
I can't hear myself very well. Okay. So, these tin cans aren't working. That's why we need your money.
We need new tin cans.
New tin cans. The old tin cans.
That's a term for headphones. Cans.
Cans, yep. So, I'm sitting in the...
That's a little behind the scenes look there. How we talk
that's
here.
That's the kind of insightful stuff we want to share with you.
Get me a rewrite.
So I'm sitting on one of my favorite little chairs. We have these little wooden... like second grade elementary school chairs that our staff saved when they threw out a bunch of them, but they saved two of them. So I make sure I always sit on this little chair. It's my special little chair.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me, it's my lucky